Hello, hello, welcome back to another episode of Front Page Dub. It's your host, as always, Cody Ojeda, your favourite trio covering A-League women's action, and I guess all of Australian women's football, to a certain extent, is back. First of all, Matt Olson from the other side of the country. How are you doing today with, I'd say it's a heatwave over there, but I think that's just standard temperature for you, isn't it?
Yeah, look, the summer gets pretty warm. I will say, like, it's actually taken a while for summer to kick in this year. I don't know how you guys have found it over East, but yeah, no, it's good vibes. And I'll tell you what a game I witnessed at the Sam Kerr Centre on the weekend. Really keen to have a good chat about that.
Well, someone that is on the, I guess, better side of Australia. Annabelle, you can say it's probably been raining horrendously around here as well, but just in general, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. As I said, I'm getting keen to get off to Europe for Christmas, so you know, soaking in the summer while I can, and then heading overseas at the end of the week. So yeah, excited to do my last podcast before a little break.
A little break. It's a bad time. Not a bad time to go over there. It's Christmas time. It shouldn't be too bad, but weather's going to be very different to what Matt's experiencing. I'm going to take a guess.
You're comparing Northern Europe to Western Australia. I think we can now fill in the gaps there.
You're going from, what, 38 degrees where you are to probably zero almost in England. It's a dreary, dreary time.
I was looking at the temperatures. I think it said it was 3 degrees today. So,
fuck that.
Yeah, I'm starting to get packed and preparing what needs to be checking.
Catching any football games while you're over there, actually?
I am keen to catch some football games. We've got United v Crystal Palace women booked. I'm going to see the United men play Newcastle. We've also got our local team from when we used to live there, which is Charlton Athletic, taking on Mansfield, I believe. So good old League One action as well.
See, what is it? Keanu Backus, I think, is there as well, actually, as well as the Wayne Train, Ben Wayne, for Mansfield at least, anyway. Carlton, actually, mate, you'll be able to answer this for me. What's his name? Actually, Maynard Brewer, is he still there?
Oh, Charlton Athletic. I feel like he might be on loan somewhere. Let's give this one a cheeky gander, because that is someone that's...
whose name you probably haven't heard in a minute.
Well, we should actually, like, be more familiar with him, to be honest.
He was in a Socceroos squad not too long ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, more or less like the extended train on, but he was, yeah. 56 games for Charlton Athletic. He was on loan to Gillingham most recently. He's back with the senior team now. I dare say the Western Australian could be starting for Charlton Athletic in that game.
There you go. You got a few odds to watch out there, Annabelle. And at least when it comes to being United, hopefully the women's team brings a lot more joy than the men's. Because
they're doing all right. The men's team not so much, but they're doing all right. I would have liked to see some of the, you know, Aussie girls while we're in London, but for some reason they all have away games the weekend we're there. So no, we would have seen Spurs, you know, Arsenal, West Ham, whoever, but they are all gone.
Considering how many London teams there are, that's actually a crazy coincidence.
I know. It's very strange. Crystal Palace is the one around, and they're playing my team, which is United. So
of all the
it's
teams
not all
you
bad.
Get to watch, it's Crystal Palace. No, that's fair enough. Hopefully Crystal Palace put on a bit of show. My shining light going to Europe will be that I end up in Sevilla somehow the same week where an hour away, Hayley Raso was playing her final, what ended up being a final game for Real Madrid, and we spent $300 on two transfers to try and get over there because the first one screwed us over. But that is a story for another day. If anyone does want to listen to it, and I'd be shocked if you did, feel free to let me know. But anyway, let's actually get into the action of what actually occurred in the league that we're meant to be covering on this podcast. Now, split round, as we said on the last pod, we're only going to have six games between the last recording and this one. So an easy kind of recap, not the Saturday that just passed, the one before, Melbourne City 2-0 over Western Sydney Wanderers, Mariners beating Canberra 2-1, and on the Sunday that just passed, Wellington Phoenix, surprise result actually, over Brisbane Roar 2-1 win. Western United winning at the death thanks to a Chiara De Domizio header, probably 20 seconds after she came off on the field. 2-1 win over Sydney FC, who there where they always continue. Adelaide 2-0 win over Newcastle Jets, and as you mentioned, Matt, a nice match at the Sam Kerr Football Centre. Perth Glory falling to a late winner from Melbourne Victory, a 1-0 loss. Annabelle, I'll start with you. What stood out for you from the week that just went past? Obviously not including the Matildas action that we're going to get into soon.
For me, it was Wellington getting a win over Brisbane, which we raved, last episode about how good Brisbane have been. And they, the team that they ended up falling to first was a team that I don't think we would have predicted to get that win. They haven't been as strong just to start the season, so I was really surprised by that. But I think it was an exciting game, and I like when underdogs win. So that's good. I don't mind when Brisbane lose. New South Wales person in me doesn't always like the Queenslanders, so I didn't mind that result.
I'm glad someone here feels that rivalry because I'll be honest, I never really buy too much into it. I'm not a State of Origin
Oh,
nut or anything
I'm a
like
State
that.
of Origin fan. My family's rugby league, so
That's
I'm
classic.
all for it. And I got some cousins that live up in Queensland, so we give each other some banter over
You'd
it.
have some good what do you call it, bragging rights this year. I actually watched that third game for once. That's not something that happens very often. I'll say that much. But, New South Wales won that day. I will say I did score a brace in my football match that was played the same night, so maybe it was just a good day for me. I'll go there. But
You were the good luck charm, Cody.
hey, I don't score braces very often, and I think that was the only two goals I scored this year in all age nine. So that's not the best flex. But just tracking back to that Wellington Phoenix game, it is really really interesting because, and Matt, please correct me on this pronunciation if I am incorrect, but Porirua Park, the last time Wellington Phoenix went there. Annalie Longo's dog went on a nice little amazing, amazing run. And in this game, Annalie Longo went on a nice, amazing solo run to score that winner for Wellington Phoenix as well. So the Longo's putting on a performance there, even if one was a canine. Matt, what stood out for you?
Well, firstly, that's I don't know if they prefer to use the name when the Phoenix women are there, but that's Gerry Collins Stadium, named after the former Wellington Hurricanes winger, one of the all-time great rugby union players. Not that we care, of course.
I was going to say, you have to know, I wouldn't have a clue who that is.
No, but I just
Sorry to any New Zealand
it's worth
rugby union
pointing out
fans out
because
there
I think I
listening.
actually referred to it on this show as the one named after the rugby player. So it's worth actually redeeming myself. Anyway, I'll tell you what though, that was really good to see, mostly because I just felt that a lot of the, I guess, comments feeding in about Brisbane at some point, similar to kind of Adelaide United's undefeated streak in the men's competition at the moment, I feel like something kind of had to give there. And if there's going to be one team to kind of end that kind of streak of not dominance, but just being in that those upper echelons, I think I'm actually really glad to see it's Phoenix that sort of with the candidates to kind of step up and get that result. I think it's also really evened out the ladder as well. I don't think looking at the bottom, let's say four teams that are here after round five, I think we've still seen some good signs from the Jets. I can kind of see where the project is going with Stephen Peters, and we'll touch on that a bit later. The Sydney sides, I feel like there's enough in them to bounce back. So the competition really as a whole for each team to be where it is, I think there's a lot going on, and Wellington getting that win really was the catalyst for that kind of exciting narrative to play out.
That's fair. I'm probably going to put a light on the Mariners actually, because I don't know if it's a team that we've spoken about too much per se. But Tiana Fuller from the New South Wales Institute of Sport in the NPL New South Wales, Annabelle, you'll be familiar with that, getting on the score sheet for them in a come from behind win over Canberra, who have been performing quite well themselves, actually taking them above Canberra on the ladder that result too. Only their second win of the season, but enough to keep them in a final spot for now. But aside that, I was really big on going into this season. They're still undefeated themselves too, which is actually quite impressive. But snapping up a run of draws that they've had, I believe it was three on the bounce. It was some good results in there though. Basically, it's all three Melbourne sides too, which is a nice little coincidence. But they face Brisbane Roar next. That'll probably be their biggest challenge going away from home so far. Maybe not their biggest challenge. They've drawn with the top two teams in the competition, but another tough challenge for them to weather. And if they can get through that with a decent result, that probably says a lot about their own credentials too. But we'll move on, because the reason why there is hardly any A-League Women's action to review this week is because the Matildas were in action. They had four games, two games against Brazil, two games against Chinese Taipei, and particularly in those latter two, we did get to see a lot of A-League women's talent, which is, of course, fantastic. And look, I'll put this to you. I don't know if this is necessarily a changing of the guard, because even in that core Matildas group, you still got players like Mary Fowler, Kyrie Cooney-Cross, Charlotte Grant, maybe to a lesser extent, Lily Carpenter, probably hitting the midpoint, the hill of her career, per se. But some new names that maybe aren't familiar with the, well, I'd say the average Matildas fan, but maybe the slightly below average Matildas fan. Names like Briley Henry, Tash Pryor, Leah Davidson, a few others there. Annabelle, I'll start with you. But who caught your eye over this period? Because obviously we spoke at length about Briley Henry in the last two pods, where you were big on her trying to get her opportunity. But there's a few others that have
I
impressed as
like
well in the
Briley
meantime.
Henry. I think she's really versatile, and I liked that she got included in the squad. And I think when she did come on, she had an impact, which, I mean, she scored a goal, so that was great to see. But the player for me was Tash Pryor. I honestly thought in those two games against Chinese Taipei, I think she came on, I thought she was better than Claire Hunt at times. So I think she fitted in. Like, I knew she fit the mold. She's tall, confident. I really liked what I saw from her.
Yeah, so I've seen that comparison a little bit actually between her and Hunt. Hunt's a player that I'm big on. I don't know if a couple of maybe, I won't even say poor games, but maybe lackluster games from her is going to make me think that she should be taken out, someone else should be put in. But Tash Pryor's definitely done herself a lot of justice, per se.
No, I'm not suggesting she gets benched or anything. I'm just saying that, yeah, no, I'm not suggesting she gets benched. Don't twist them here, but
We're
I'm
not
just
going
saying that I think
to take
Pryor
this
was
down the
at
same
that
route with Jovi
standard,
Juric's
which I
comments, don't
didn't
worry.
expect her to be. Well, I actually did say that, to be fair, but Pryor, I think, is just at that level, which is really exciting, to see more players that can meet that standard, because I think some of the other players are really strong, but they weren't quite up to it. Maybe not like quite up to a starting role, quite up to being a key player. Whereas I think Pryor stepped in and immediately you could see her potential, which, yeah, I was didn't expect and was pleasantly surprised by.
Yeah, it's one, because look, maybe it's just my opinion of Newcastle Jets. They're not a side that I usually go and think, okay, yeah, they're one of the best teams in the league with some of the best players in the league. But someone like Tash Pryor, maybe because she's in an environment where she's not in one of those, like a Melbourne City or a Melbourne Victory, where her name's going to be in the forefront constantly, maybe that name kind of gets, how do you say, doesn't get brought up in conversations much. It actually reminds me a little bit of when Claire Hunt first broke through at the Wanderers. It was someone that, Wanderers weren't
Absolutely.
exactly doing too well at the time, but if you looked at her on from purely an individual point of view, her performances were actually quite good. Maybe I haven't watched Newcastle Jets that closely. She took me by surprise when she was first included, but the way she kind of stepped into the side and performed, you can't knock it as well. She was absolutely fantastic. A couple of people that I was quite big on when they came in. Someone who I've actually been quite big on recently in the A-League as well. But the one person that I'm actually really glad got an opportunity, because they're the one that I can see really tying Melbourne City's midfield together, is Laura Hughes. I really liked what she was able to do at Canberra. And if you watch her on an individual basis, not someone that always stands out, but someone that can keep a side ticking, can do the dirty work and do the stuff that allows some more creative players to go on and do their job. Her coming into the side, I thought, was actually really good, and she's someone that, based on some of the performances that we've seen from at least an A-League, that we've seen at an A-League level, she's someone that really deserved this kind of opportunity too. So I'm really glad that she got that chance, even if it was a late inclusion that probably came around due to injuries as well. Obviously, Chloe Legazza going off injured in that game against, well, the first game against Chinese
Yeah,
Taipei, but
that was unfortunate because she's been waiting so long for another shot. And she had been a kind of a Matilda's squad regular, so disappointing to see her have to exit the night early. Another player that really stood out to me, but it's not really a changing of the guard. If anything, it's a continuing of the old guard that I thought might have, slipped away, was Tamika Yallop. I thought she was really strong in all the games. And the past few years, I thought perhaps her impact was dwindling. Perhaps it was time to give younger players a bigger shot because she may not be having as big an impact on the, international stage. But for me, I thought she was really important in all the games she participated in. I think she was crucial in terms of bringing the ball forward and contributing more to the attack and getting, you know, people involved. And a player that perhaps I'd been really excited to see potentially even replace Yallop heading into the future was Daniela Galic, but I don't think she had a great impact when she was given the starting role. She disappeared a little bit from the games, whereas Yallop was able to have more of an impact and kind of a presence within the game. So I was, yeah, excited by that.
And that probably comes with a bit of experience as well, which is funny because I remember it's not something you've just thought. You actually said that on, I think, the first podcast that we did this season. You weren't sure if Yallop is someone that's worth keeping in the Matilda squad and we should probably be looking for alternate people.
I think her impact's been lesser in recent years, and she's come on and maybe not been able to create, you know, exciting opportunities. But these last few appearances for the Matildas, I think she kind of brought it back to you know, her prime almost. She really had some great performances. Exactly. And maybe that's because of the way Brisbane Roar have been doing. I don't know. Maybe she's just hitting a good patch at the minute. But yeah, it's good for all who, you know, are fans of Tamika Yallop.
It probably does speak, actually. Like, when you've got confidence and you're playing well at a club level, you're able to come into a national team side, carry that form over. I'm not one that's big on the whole, oh, if you're not doing this or that at club level, you shouldn't be in the Matilda squad. If you're one of the best, or in any national team squad, if you're one of the nation's best players, you should be there no matter what, as long as you're performing for your nation. But you never know, maybe the start that Brisbane Roar's going on to just put a basically new lease of life or a new bit of confidence in her that she's been able to take into the Matilda side. And you're talking about an experienced player as well. You're talking about someone that has had a lot of good moments in the Matilda squad too. So whether she's getting old or not as well. And look, I'm not going to criticize what you said, because I was half of the same opinion at the same time too. But it speaks a lot to your character as a person when you can go back and say, maybe I was wrong. So you know what? That's actually a great call there, Annabelle. Well done.
Well, she's proved me wrong. I think at the time it was, you know, those performances weren't there and now they are. So if you can perform, like you said, it's what you do in the Matilda shirt. And if she performs well in the Matilda shirt, then I'm all for her playing in that jersey.
Yeah, the game that Galich started, I believe that was the first Chinese Taipei game, which is the one that I actually didn't get to see, unfortunately. So I'm not sure how her starting debut for the Matildas went, but I do remember Galich's impact off the bench in the second Brazil game. And one thing that actually struck me in a good way was the way that, especially in the kind of the last 5-10 minutes, every time Matilda's gone forward, and we were actually a little bit relentless in that pressure towards the end of that match, which is good to see, because sometimes Matildas do hold onto the ball a little bit too much than what they need to. But there was that bit of an attacking, I won't say threat, but attacking intention may be the best word. But a lot of it was actually going through Daniela Galic, which, for not just herself to have that confidence to be able to take a game and try and pull the strings against a famous footballing nation like Brazil, but for the rest of the squad around her to have that confidence in her that went, okay, she may be an 18-year-old kid, but every time we've got the ball, we're going to look to go through her to try and progress us and to try and make sure we're pushing forward. For the side to have that confidence in her to use her as a key cog in their side, that's actually really good as well. Daniela Galic, Matt, you can back me up on this point, but I've been a very, very big fan of her for a long time. So to see her adapt to international level in that way, yeah, sure, maybe a starting debut. Like I said, I can't speak because I didn't really get to watch the match. But Annabelle, I'll take your word for it, probably wasn't as what we were hoping for, I guess. Yeah. But to perform
well,
like
that's why I was disappointed, because she did do really well against, you know, Brazil in that when she came on it late in that game, she was really contributing. But then when she started the next game, she didn't really contribute. Like, I barely saw her on the ball. And, you know, in the same breath, I don't think Emily Van Egmond was contributing very much either. So I think perhaps the midfield was just having an off day or something. But the two of them were sort of a bit absent. And it was Tamika Yallop who stepped up and was really controlling the middle of the field, and everything felt like it was going through her. So I guess it's a good sign that when other players are a bit out of things, you know, someone else can step up and help out. But yeah, it was disappointing because, like you said, you've been big on her for a while. So have I. I've really been excited by her development. But you know, she's young, everyone has an off game. So I don't think it says much about her future to have, you know, not, you know, not every
One
game
off
can be
game's not going to kill her
perfect.
career, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's fair. It's look, you're talking about consistency at an international and senior level for an 18-year-old, essentially child still. Personally, I'm not going to look too much into it. Like I said, what I got to say of her was pretty good, so I'm going to roll with that, and that is great for me. Matt, I'll throw to you before we kind of move on to, I guess, just a general overview of the games. But from that Matilda series, is there anyone that caught your eye that you were impressed with, mainly from those ones that really got there first or an early opportunity?
Yeah, I think someone that stands out is probably again, I'm sorry, I have sort of missed the last few minutes of the conversation, so don't excuse me. But I think the rise of Leah Davidson reaching its ultimate climax with her being in the Matildas is one that I think even probably surprised a few football people just how sort of consistent she was in coming from that A-League space to then adapting to the international level pretty well. You could say what you want about the quality of opposition that was faced, fair enough. But ultimately, we're about to play in the Asian Cup, and someone like Chinese Taipei is ultimately an Asian Cup quarterfinalist. So within that context, that adaptability is absolutely massive, and a really, really huge compliment to someone that, again, I just think when you think of like A-League stars, you know, the people that we talk about a lot, I just don't think that Leah Davidson has always like stood out as like the elite ones in the same way that a lot of similar players have been. So for me, yeah, probably Leah would be a bit of a standout.
Yeah, that's kind of on a point I made earlier as well. Like, if I look at Melbourne City's midfield, the person that stands out for me is Laura Hughes. But that might also be based on the way I watch the game. Leah Davidson probably plays a bit more. I won't even say advanced role because she does play a bit more of an eight, whereas Hughes is more the six in that side. But the fact is, they're also part of a midfield trio that's winning the league at the moment. So no matter who you've got in that side, they're going to be in quality. And we've spoken about it as well before, where there's players in that Melbourne City side that were probably unlucky not to be given an opportunity in this camp as well. Alexia Apostolakis is the main one that comes to mind. But you look at that Melbourne City squad as well. Brylee Henry got a chance. She was able to do well. And Brylee Henry was someone that we were trying to work out how she got in the squad, considering she was barely starting at Melbourne City too. So, you know, someone like that's able to come in, make an opportunity, or take an opportunity, do well with it, when they're still battling for their side with an, well, battling for their spot in their side against another Australian. It shows how much quality Melbourne City has, and also how much quality there is at Matilda's disposal as well. As much as we're talking about future planning and Tony Gustavsson wanted to give, you know, so many people an opportunity, there are still some players out there that, you know, maybe, you know, when you talk about Brylee Henry, maybe she was given her opportunity too early, but now they're coming into a position where it's like, okay, I can knock on the door for the Matildas and make an impact on the side, as Brylee Henry was able to do so well. So it is interesting to see, especially leading into the Asian Cup, like you said, Matt, seeing how these players can go against other Asian opposition. As much as we can talk about Chinese Taipei being a quarterfinalist, the next step will be to see how they can go against a South Korea or a Japan or a China or maybe even a North Korea, considering what they've been doing at youth level. So I'm very, very intrigued. I actually wouldn't mind seeing a friendly against North Korea. I just want to see how that side goes because they are very much an enigma. When it comes to football, especially in the women's space, because I don't know how they produce quality players on a consistent basis. Matt, you probably know more than me, but that'll be a conversation for another day. Just an overview of those games, because we look at Chinese Taipei, and I think the one thing that really stood out to me from the Matildas in this camp was the way they were able to build into it. The results steadily improved. We had the two losses against Brazil. I think the performance has improved across both those games. I won't say a narrow win, but a decent win against Chinese Taipei before ultimately thumping him in the last game that we played. Annabelle, I'll start with you. Talk about those first two games against Brazil. It's hard to gain, I guess, a proper gauge of where the Matildas are at because, one, we're playing a system that's going to be redundant by the time they play next because hopefully we'll have a permanent coach, but also the type of game that we're playing as well. It's not the sort of thing that we're going to face, or maybe something we face in Asia, mainly against the Middle Eastern sides, should any make the final 12 or 16 that end up in the competition. But a frustrating game, but was there anything that you were able to take out of that from Matilda's point of view, whether good or bad?
I liked the way the Matildas pushed forward with quite a level of intensity in the latter stages of those Brazil games when they were down. You know, they've got that nickname, Never Say Die Matildas for nothing. And whilst it didn't come off, I think it was We've already spoken about the way Gallich got involved and some new players got involved and all contributed. I think we need to get more shots off. We need to get more shots on target. But I liked the build-up from the Matildas. It wasn't just all long balls or anything. I was disappointed by the way they started, particularly the first game where we were down 2-0 after 13 minutes, I think it was. So that wasn't great. I think we need to kind of go longer without conceding two goals. So, you know, but I think it shows that how important a full-time coach is, to be honest, because they're, as you said, they're playing a style that's quite experimental, trying to get some new faces in, almost trying to show a coach what they've got to work with, like a bit of an audition for a new coach to watch and see, or do I want to take this on? Do I want to be part of that? And I think the sooner we get a new coach in, the better for the stability and kind of the ability to get those future plans in place, like, and moving forward and get a jump on them. If they want to pick the right coach, not pick the coach that's available now, which I do get. I agree that I think this is an amazing group of talent. And so if we wasted this opportunity to pick a perfect coach, then that would be silly. We need to pick a coach that suits the strengths of the players that are, you know, crucial to the Matilda starting lineup. But at the same time, you know, a little bit of urgency would be good so that they can get in there and start working with these players and making things happen. So, you know, it's, there's pros and cons to both of those approaches. So hopefully we can find that perfect coach quickly and both, you know, aspects of that can be, you know, achieved.
Yeah, I was at I actually was at the press conference James Johnson had after Tony Gustafsson left the role and after the Matildas were knocked out of the Olympics, and he was very upfront with everyone saying that they're going to take their time with making sure they get this appointment right. And they highlighted the fact that they weren't having, they didn't need to be in competitive action again until January 2026, which is plenty of time away when you think about it, but it has been 4 months. And I don't know if maybe this is just that they're keeping what they're doing very, very secretive, but the fact that there's been no noise about who may be going into that role is probably the thing that surprises me the most. But I think
yeah, that's a good point, because there's nothing, there's no leaks, there's not even any ideas going out, there's no they're meeting with so and so, or just not even linking to the role seems strange.
The FA is keeping a tight lid on things. I mean, there'd be journalists sniffing around as well, which is what kind of makes it a little bit funnier. But yeah, no one's able to get a bite or anything like that, which is interesting. Hopefully there is movement going behind the scenes. We're obviously not privy to that information, unfortunately. But if there's one thing that surprised me about Samani that you kind of actually alluded to, Annabelle, the fact that he did kind of change the system so much compared to what the Matildas are used to, going to throw the back, and it probably did contribute to the fact that we were conceding so early in those games. I thought a lot of players, especially in those early stages of matches, they genuinely just looked lost, which isn't a good thing, but I don't know how much you read into it when it's a system that we're not even going to be playing long term, which in turn just makes it a little bit more frustrating, because suddenly it's results that we have that are probably needless in the end as well, which does suck, but ultimately it's a friendly. We can all move on from it. Matt, I'll throw it to you as an AFC expert. I won't say self-proclaimed because it's more proclaimed by me. But those results against Chinese Taipei, not necessarily just the results standing on its own, but the performances that went on with it. The 3-1, the goal that we conceded was probably not very good, but to go into that final match with even less of our core group of players, a very much experimental squad, and to be able to get a resounding result like that, there's got to be positives going towards the Asian Cup, isn't there, surely?
I mean, it's exactly what the whole experiment was about. They rotated and played a squad that was built exactly for that occasion. You had a bunch of players that were really hungry and wanted to take their chance, and that's how you ended up with really the droppings that we got. I'm not really going to take anything away from Chinese Taipei either. I think that obviously it's an environment in, you know, front of sold-out crowds in Australia with, you know, A-League players ready to prove their worth, some of whom, you know, had already got their move to Europe, like a Daniele Gallich, for example. And I mean, this is a team that took Paraguay to penalties in Hamilton. We're not talking about like too bad of a football team here, really. And I also think that's something that goes over people's heads as well, is that maybe, okay, there's a bit of a lack of depth in women's football, but Chung Kyung-min is an incredible manager from and a very esteemed background. And I just feel like the way that an A-League, essentially what was an extended A-League squad and A-League 11 for a few of those games, but a few players here or there, I feel like that's exactly what was required of the team. And so I think that given that there's going to actually be more gearing, not specifically in the AFC space, but also towards the SheBelieves Leaves Cup is essentially the next major, tournament, if you want to call it that, that's on the horizon. And ultimately, that'll be in North America playing the likes of Colombia and Linda Caicedo, right? So it's a bit of a funny one in that, yes, these are Asian Cup, preparations, but the next kind of big, competitive games are actually in the Americas. So it's probably just biding time until that sort of announcement of who the manager is finally made, and then we'll see if there's someone there that off the back of this performance is able to get that move to Europe or stake their claim in the A-League for another season. I mean, there are plenty of candidates to do that. Someone like a Bradley Henry, I just think is very well suited for it. Again, you don't know how high the ceiling is for someone like a Leah Davidson, so. Even seeing Morgan Aquino, I mean, who would have ever thought in our wildest of dreams that we'd have seen Morgan Aquino in, essentially, the material is like, okay, she didn't wear the kit or play, but it's just like that to me, the fact that it happened is incredible. Everyone thought Sally James was going to take her spot at Perth, and before you know it, she's got to move to the USL and in a Matilda squad. It's an incredible, incredible achievement. And, it's a true testament to the players that were selected that they were able to put in the performance they did. Again, people don't realize it, but I don't think the quality of opposition was like terrible. And that's worth keeping in mind when you see, six goals whacked past them. That's a real sign of intent that's shown in that squad.
Definitely higher quality squad than what Uzbekistan were when they came at the start of the year. I'll say that much. Funnily, you mentioned Aquino because the other keeper that was in the squad, Chloe Lincoln, it actually kind of baffles me that she got her debut before Jada Wyman did, which is considering how long she's been around, how many Matildas camps she's been in, the fact that she hasn't played yet is something that still baffles me. I mean that with little disrespect to.
I'm going to be honest with you, though. I think it's actually a testament to the quality of keeper that the A-League is starting to produce. Because someone like a Morgan Aquino on her day, and I've sadly not really had the time to look into how she's gone in DC, but I dare say if she keeps performing at a more elite level, that is someone that you are more trustworthy of to be in a third or fourth, Matilda spot than someone like a Jada Wyman. Just And I only say it probably because of the domestic resume more than anything else. But you are also right in that, she was I don't want to be too harsh, but she was kind of that filler for the third spot for many, many cycles. And I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like there is actually a better quality of keeper coming up that could easily dethrone someone. Like a Jada Wyman. And I only reference Aquino so strongly just because I'm so familiar with her. So
Makes
let's
sense.
I'm not sitting here saying Morgan Aquino should be the number three. I'm not going there at all, just to be clear.
Just leading into the SheBelieves Cup that you mentioned before, Matt. You talk of probably a 24 to 26 player squad that's going to go into this, significantly shorter than what we had for this camp, of course. But is there anyone that probably impressed you to the point that you think they actually deserve another opportunity to be right in the main group this time as well?
Oh, look, no, the squad, I think the squad was too heavily rotated for a start. Someone that I'd like to see given a bit more of a crack is probably Amy Sayer. Feel like she's been in and around, and I know, she's had a lot of really crazy things go on in her life with the sacrifice she's made to try and professionalize herself as in her career, and also just like the sacrifice for the jersey as well, I think has been really incredible. But I don't know how, again, we don't know who the manager is, we don't know what style they like, we don't know what the vision really is going forward, right? Because ultimately, whether we like it or not, this is ultimately a team that has to be shaped as a bit of a rebuild. They're coming out of the golden generation. And do we have a lot of really good young talent? Do we have a lot of good domestic talent? Of course we do. But I'm just being honest about the fact that the direction will be so heavily dependent on who that new manager is for me to actually sit there and say, I've got this or this person in mind. But there are a few names that I've seen sparsely over the last few years where I'd just like to see more of them. And I think Amy Say is probably up there as one that once you've got a crack in Perth, it went a bit haywire, but that's not to say she couldn't produce at a really high level again.
She is also out with an ACL injury at the moment, which doesn't help anything, unfortunately.
Sorry, but you're talking about a tournament that's in 2025, yeah?
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if she'll be back by then. That's the thing.
no, but I'm just saying you asked a long-term question. You didn't
Was
say,
asking about the Sheba Leafs cut.
well, okay. All right, there's two ways to interpret that, but fair enough.
My bad. Bloody hell, man. Well, Annabelle, now that you completely understand what I'm trying to ask, Sheba Leaves Cup. Anyone from this group
Got it.
that's just come through, is there anyone that you want to see given another opportunity, like right properly integrated with the core Matilda side?
I think yes. I've already raved on a little bit about Tash Cryer. I think I would like to see more out of her since she's performed well in her first sort of introduction to the squad. I know she's not brand new. She's been around a little while, but I really like the way Fryer's still contributing. And I think she's starting to cement herself into the regular squad a little bit. And this is might be a little bit controversial, but I think I would like to see pressure piled from young players and from new players who are performing well in the A-leagues or abroad, wherever it may be, on perhaps some regular Matildas mainstays. And I think there are some that I've already mentioned that perhaps haven't performed as well recently or have had off games. There are some that are perhaps a little bit inconsistent. Like for me, Emily Van Egmond is someone that I think we've already seen the best of her. And she's had 150 incredible games for the Matildas, but I think she's past the best of her career and maybe some players can start to challenge her for that in that midfield. I also think that Hayley Raso is a player that is incredible when she's on and can contribute so much on a good game. When she's not having a good game, I think there's not much in between for Hayley Raso. And recently against the Brazil, when she got really fired up, it didn't necessarily lead to her having a big impact, with the ball at her feet. She was certainly pushing people over and doing all that sort of stuff, but a lot of crosses went astray, went straight to the goalkeeper, even went out for goal kicks, which was disappointing. So I'd like to see pressure piled onto those sorts of players so that they, A, step up, perform great, retain their spot, or perhaps young players who are on a roll and in really great form can, take that spot.
Yeah, Raso, she's almost like a prime candidate for when she's maybe hitting 33, 35 to convert to a fullback per se. Maybe not unlike what Jesús Navas did towards the end of his career. But Van Egmond, that's probably not even a controversial call. Based on the reaction from social media after her I think it's her performance in the first Chinese Taipei game, people were very displeased with what she was able to produce. So I think there's a few people that might agree with you on that one, actually, which the only thing I can say in defense of her is the moment you see her back in an A-League women's competition, you see how good she really can be and how good she is compared to some of the other players in the league. But if you're not performing, people have the right to ask the question as well. So there's definitely something there to, and there's definitely an opportunity there for people to take that spot if they come in and perform. Gallagher, someone that we mentioned before, even someone like Leah Davidson, if they can produce at that level that we expect or require, who's to say they're not going to knock a mainstay off? The moment players get too comfortable is the moment that a national team is going to fall apart. And I think we saw that a little bit with the Socceroos as well. If we're looking very locally, you see some other players get an opportunity under Tony Popovich, things, I won't say drastically improve, but you can see a little bit more a few more people on their toes, which is what you need in a
Yeah.
national team setup. You
I
can't be
just
too
like to
comfortable.
see that sort of competitive tension, I guess, where you're really
Yeah.
fighting for your spot. You've got to bring your A game every camp, every game, or else, no spot's guaranteed. The other thing for me is I know she's still a couple of months off, but I'd love to see Sam go back. I'd love to see her put on a Matilda's jersey again. You know,
That's a call
she's
for
a
the
star
soul,
for a
isn't it?
reason. She hits goals out of, you know, out of nowhere, out of, and she just is the attacking weapon the Matildas need. So I'd love to see her, you know, finish up this rehab, put on a Chelsea jersey and do well, and then slide back into the Matildas squad really well. And you know, she was the captain. I don't know if she'll go straight back into that, but I'd love to see her back on the field.
Well, that'll be in
best
your coach's
best
choice.
Injured Perth-based Matilda since Anna Lowry. There you go.
Bloody hell, man. Look, nothing ever. I'm sure many people are keen to have her back. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like that knee's getting any better. I think the last we heard out of the Chelsea camp is that you're looking maybe February, March, which is crazy to think about. But hopefully everything goes well. And frankly, I'd rather her back when she's 100% ready than her being
of
rushed,
course.
because the last thing we need is for her to be rushed and then she picks up an injury right before the Asian Cup, because that would be horrible, to say the least. We'll move back into A-League Women's action. And as we kind of said earlier, because it was a split round, there wasn't too much that we're going to be able to deep dive into. But we've passed the 5-game mark for the season, and we'll have almost like a health check-in to see how some of these sides are going, what we've kind of seen and what we've learned from, I guess, the first 5 rounds. So I've got a few questions here. Some relate specifically to clubs, some are a bit more general that we can kind of keep open-ended. But I'm going to start with you, Annabelle, first. Who's impressed you the most this season?
Melbourne City, I think, have impressed me the most, but that's very closely followed by the Central Coast Mariners. I think Melbourne City have an incredible squad, good coaching. Like I said, a player like Briley Henry struggles to even make the side when she's, you know, in quite good form at the minute, which I guess, you know, different style of play, different squad, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think Melbourne City have looked really good. I think Leah Davidson, as you've already mentioned, has been great in the midfield for them, as have their other midfielders. So I like what I've seen from them. I think Central Coast are a really good squad. The way that squad has been built, they all complement each other so well. M Husband has just been able to unlock the best out of every single player that comes through there. They seem to just put on a whole new level. For example, like Shaden Evans, who scored in their recent game. You know, I saw her a lot this season in the NPL competition here in New South Wales, and she was good, don't get me wrong, but she wasn't a star player in any match I commentated or saw. She wasn't, you know, setting that competition on fire. And I think M Husband has just really taken her game to a whole new level, as have most of the Mariners. They've all stepped up there, which shows a great setup and a great, you know, coaching staff there. So both of those teams are in good spots for my mind.
Yeah, Mariners definitely one to catch the eye, the way they've kind of grown. Look, they've avoided losing the season, which is always a positive, but some of the results they've gotten, they've come from behind to win against Canberra. They came from behind twice to draw against, Melbourne City. Melbourne Victory, they almost nabbed a point from them at home, of course, but almost deservedly. Probably should have gotten 3 points out of that game too. So there's a lot of good signs there, even if they have only won 2 games this season. They've got themselves in a decent position. They're undefeated. Lots to like about them. Matt, what about you? Who's caught your eye?
Looking across the whole kind of fortnight of football that we've seen, I'm actually going to almost say this because I've not really seen a lot of them, but I feel like there's something going on with Western United under Cat Smith where they're real quiet achievers. The fact that they kind of started out maybe a bit on the shaky side and now they're in the six again, they got 2 wins under their bag and a lot of quiet achievers in that team. I mean, I feel like someone like Sarah Exvic, the Filipino international. Remember when we all thought the Philippines was going to like take over the A-League? You know, just a lot of
actually,
a lot of just quiet achievers going about their business. You know, I know that the hype machine I gave to Vani Prakash has maybe been a bit of a curse. Carly Johnson's done it well for herself. You know, you got Grace Murray in there. There's a team that has some pretty high potential, but I think you know, that they may be just doing what they need to do so far. And I think the testament to the way that the team is playing now is maybe even, something of a comment about the way that I think Kat Smith actually maybe under-delivered slightly when she first came into the setup. So for the club to then kind of show that faith the same way they've shown John Aloisi a bucket full of faith in with the men's team. I mean that ultimately is where you build a DNA for yourselves. And we look at so many other clubs in the A-League where they're just tossing managers out left, right, and centre, and they're stuck in a rut. And it just seems to me that Western are okay with being down on their luck sometimes. They're okay with a team that'll sit eighth or ninth in a 12-team league as long as they can see the vision and as long as they really have a lot of love and respect for each other. And I'll just be honest with you, in terms of on-field, I don't really think I've ever seen a Western United team that you have a whole lot of disappointment in. So it's nice that they're like, again, people can say what they want about the club off the pitch. I get that. But I just feel like there's a DNA at Western that's come together, and I'm really kind of liking the way that they might not be the most remarkable team on paper at the minute, but they're doing enough to be in the six, and they're doing enough to put in some decent performances.
Yeah, look, you look at them, the only real adverse result they had was that loss against Melbourne Victory, the 4-1 loss. That on its own was poor. Maybe you can point at the 1-0 draw against Jets as well, but that was your night round. That can be, you don't know what you're going to get in a weekend like that, I guess. But otherwise, you got a strong win against Wellington Phoenix, a good win against Sydney FC, draw against Mariners, even if it was at home. There's stuff there to be excited about. There was that, obviously, you're talking about that little bit of a slump if you look at across the first five games in the middle there. But overall, it's a good side. They're one that I had a lot of expectations for leading into the season as well. So I guess I'm not surprised that there's potential there in them. I actually thought they'd be doing a little bit better than they are now myself, if I'm being completely honest. But yeah, it's definitely a side to watch. I'd be surprised if they're not in around the top four come, I guess, April, March or April. I can't remember when the season finishes exactly. No, if I look, probably normie response for me, Brisbane and Adelaide, they're the ones that have probably shocked me the most. Adelaide, I did see a good season coming from them, but I thought they'd have to build their way in this season. Their key players have been able to stay fit, which is probably the most important thing for them. Brisbane Roar, we spoke about them last week. I'm not going to let one result, I guess, change my opinion that they're actually a half-decent side. But I want to see what you guys think of this. One side that's actually shocked me a little bit is Wellington Phoenix. They're still eighth, yes, but the way they've been able to grow into the season, they didn't look good at all in that first game against Western United. But game on game, they look like they're growing and improving. To get a result like that against Brisbane Roar, who look like the informed team and I guess the side to watch so far, to be able to get a result against them is quite impressive. And the other game they won as well was Adelaide United, which, like I said before, you're not around, you don't know where you're going to get dished up that weekend. But to get a result against another quality side, that's, I guess, surprising people moving into this season. There's a lot there to be excited about them. I think it's actually quite impressive the way they've been able to build themselves up. They've got Melbourne Victory away next. That'll be a challenge, to say the least. But I think there's a lot to like about them. They're one that I'm definitely going to keep my eye on. Shout out all the Knicks fans that listen to this podcast. I think there are a few at least. And it'll be interesting to see how that rivalry builds up in the women's game when Auckland come in next season as well. That'll be one to watch. Matt, I'll stay with you for this. Opposite, who's disappointed you the most?
We're gonna have to have, it's time to talk about Sydney FC, isn't it? I think the very
Just before you go
Annabelle
on,
doesn't get that reference.
before you go on, Annabelle, in 2022, Matt wrote an article that was titled "It's
2021.
Time to Talk About Sydney FC." Was that the one that started with a deep dive into the political situation in Barbados too?
That was when this was still Christian's hobby in his bedroom, and I was able to just that's a story.
You were able to talk shit.
Basically, yes. We weren't accredited then, so we could do it
Sounds like
whatever
I
we
got
want.
some post recording research. I'm gonna have to dig that one out of the
You've
archives.
got FPF lore to catch up on, I'll say that much.
The link between Barbados and Sydney FC, I'm not aware of, but you watch, I will be. I
It
will be
doesn't
aware of it.
exist, but Matt found it.
Anyway, look, I think the thing is, right, we saw probably where there were issues with a lot of the combinations in the team that Juric was putting out, and I just think that lack of structure in the Sydney FC team as the weeks have gone on, it's almost like We're sitting there going, oh, well, you know what? They've actually shown a bit of signs in this game. Next week, they'll be better. They've shown a bit of signs again, and they're showing signs again, and they're showing signs again. And it's just that back and forward conversation that's we're talking about, you know, a team that's supposed to be the cream of the crop, you know, the elite program in women's football. And like, they're just not actually being that version of themselves. There's no improvement other than the one or two things that we can really obviously pick out as being, you know, really poor in certain areas. And I think each other thing that really gets me is each week it'll be one player that we can pick out and go, I don't really think they're playing at their best levels. And it really is just around that midfield. And then you get the really horrible injury to Hannah happen, and you've got to restructure the midfield again when it wasn't even really working to begin with. I mean, it's a nightmare. And the idea that I went onto this podcast, albeit with neither of you two, but the idea that I went onto this podcast and said I was literally acting like they're going to walk it. Man, football can be a cruel game. It can be a really, really cruel game. And yeah, I'd really struggle to see Sydney still be here, but to have confidence in their ability to just pop into the top six as other teams were able to do. Wellington proving they'll be capable of it. Western have done it, as I was just saying. Mariners, you talk about how good they've been. When is Sydney FC gonna get there? And like, I'm worried. I don't know about either of you, but I'm worried.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know, Juric has made, especially look at the last weekend, he made a lot of, I won't say big calls, but interesting calls. Brian Edwards drops, Talia Franco coming in, Abby Lemon coming in for Frey Bison, who's one of their visa players as well, and one of very few that they've got in their side because they do rely on a lot of heavily talented A-League women's players. But I don't know if he's in a position where he may be getting a bit desperate himself as well, and maybe he's juggling too much. He's just taken over the City United gig in the NPL New South Wales too, which taking up a little bit more of his time as well. There's a lot there that he's got to think about, juggle, and look after. So I don't know if he, even him personally, if he's biting off more than he can chew. Annabelle, maybe we do need to start asking questions about Ante Juric. I'm not going to go that far yet, but. On one hand, you look at them and go, surely this can't last forever. Like they've got the quality in their side. They've got to rise up one way or another, sooner or later. But there, I think there's you're slowly seeing a scenario form where they actually don't rise up, where they actually kind of sit in this lull period for an extended period of time, even if it isn't for the full season, but long enough that they actually dash their finals hopes, which I don't know if it'd be disastrous for the club. They do have a good, strong following that you'd want to think can stay consistent, but maybe without that name of Courtney Vine in their side and a poor season, those high quality crowds that we saw last season may actually dwindle away, which would be very, very poor for the league, unfortunately. But the way this side's going, it's I think you can actually look at it as a realistic possibility. Not a guarantee, but there is a scenario there where they actually don't make finals, and it's a big call to make 5 rounds into the season. It's not the scenario that I think will occur, but I think it's a scenario that's now a possibility. Annabelle, I'll move on to you. Is there anyone else besides Sydney FC that you're disappointed with? Because I think we've covered that one at least.
Yes, I could go on about Sydney FC is disappointing me, but I won't. For me, the team that's been a bit disappointing is Western Sydney. I mean, they're at the bottom, and they're often at the bottom, so it's not a surprise disappointment per se. But you know, it's tough to see a team like that who have a good amount of talented young players continuously losing and losing big. Which is disappointing. I think something needs to change all over the park, which is really tough because where do you start when they're leaking goals? There's just a complete inability to get shots, particular shots on target. And, you know, where do you start when there seems to be problems everywhere? So I'm not going to try and solve that one. That's above my pay grade. But I think it's disappointing when, you know, you look at Melbourne and the way that Victory and City are both going really well. Western United as well are having a good go of things, and the way that's probably really exciting for Melbourne football fans. I think it's Sydney FC and Western Sydney Wanderers have never quite had that same level of rivalry in the women's game because the women at the Wanderers just haven't been as good. And now that Sydney FC are having a down year, you'd like the Wanderers to step up and get. Keep the city excited, but that's not happening either. So disappointing, you know, for me.
I don't know
Can I
ton.
just can I just
Okay.
interject to this point though? Because I think it actually arguably almost because of how ex like really really poor their defensive record is in particular. I'd actually argue in some ways it's more disappointing than what you're seeing with Sydney FC, which sounds absurd. But the whole thing around Robbie Hooker was he like fixed the Wanderers, like they were going to be a competitive team, and they've regressed so much. So quickly to the point where, I mean, yeah, they've still not conceded the most amount of goals in the league, but there's nothing, when there's nothing going forward and you're racking up those sorts of numbers, you're just fundamentally stuck in a system that won't work. And again, if I'm not mistaken, the last, what, four games on the bounce, that's, yeah, I mean, they've not scored, and the Derby was a pretty tight one with Sydney, but other than that, they've just been completely unmatched. If that's how you're going to go into every game, like there's not really a whole lot you can do. It's actually reminiscent of David Zrelic's issues with the Perth Wellington men's team at the moment. Like, what can actually be done to ail that in any way? And we shouldn't be having this conversation about the Wanderers. They were on such an upward trajectory out of the back of last year with the stability and everything like that. So it's just a really, really baffling situation.
There's one thing that I want.
Absolutely. They got our hopes up last year with those great performances to end the year with Sophie Harding in phenomenal form, and you thought that that might continue. I think too much pressure has perhaps been placed on her. Like I said, they've got a really young group, and I think a lot goes through Harding and is expected to go through Harding, and that's a lot, you know, a system that isn't working it right now, at least. I think it's, yeah, too much trying to go through her, and everyone's aware of her talent now, whereas last year perhaps she was a little bit more unknown and she sort of surprised everyone with how good she was. Now everyone's like, Sophie Harding is the one player to watch really, because no one else is going that great at the Wanderers, and it's going to be tough to fix this year. I'm not sure it does get fixed this year, whereas I think Sydney FC has more chance of fixing some things, even if they just beat the bottom feeders. I think Sydney FC can beat the lower teams and move into a mid-table spot. I think Western Sydney don't get off the bottom.
There's one thing that I want to interject with the Wanderers. It almost feels like there's two different approaches where Robbie Hooker came out, and it probably was because he came in so late to the side as well. I don't think he was trying to stamp his own authority on things. I think he was almost looking at that job like, okay, I've got a bunch of players in front of me. What do I need to do to get one, the best out of them, and two, get the best out of the squad altogether? Whereas, and it worked because, you know, arguably he did. I didn't picture Wanderers finishing that high last season. This season, I actually had decent expectations for them, but and Annabelle, you can think back to our chat as well with Sienna Sivesca, where she was saying, "Oh, Robbie Hooker wants us to introduce this tiki-taka style of play." The reality is, I don't think he's got the quality of players to do that right off the bat. There's something it's got to work towards, and a lot of the goals they're conceding are coming from, and a lot of the mistakes they're making are coming from trying to implement a style of play that probably doesn't suit the girls that he's got at his disposal at the moment. I understand it's a process. I understand it's things that you've got to work towards, and you're going to have those teething issues. But in the meantime, the reality is, if you don't have the quality there, there was no problem last year with just adapting to the players that you have and trying to play a certain way that helped get results at the very least. But now it's almost like he's trying to shoehorn something that they're not necessarily ready to do, which is probably going to be frustrating for Wanderers fans as well. They've got a game against Western United this Saturday. They play back at Wanderers Football Park against Perth next, and you look at those two games. If they don't get points out of that or at all, and there is a realistic scenario that comes up where they go 0 from 6 possible points, you got to. I'm not going to say you're going to start asking questions about Robbie Hooker, but you almost start asking questions about what he's doing and what he's trying to play. I'd almost sit there if I'm in his position. You can't go back on your word as a coach, I guess, but I'm surprised he moved away from. Maybe a thought process that worked so well for them the year before. That's the part that's kind of gotten me. Next question, I'm going to pose to both of you. Whoever wants to interject, go for it. And it goes against something that I said probably a mere 10 minutes ago, but did we judge Brisbane Roar too fast?
When you look at the quality of opposition, maybe you look at the teams they were beating, and majority of them are in the bottom half of the table right now. So perhaps they performed strongly
Actually, sorry to
against
interrupt you,
some
Annabelle. Yeah, you
weak
look at the three
teams.
sides they've beaten. They are literally the bottom three.
Yeah, so they've looked strong against bad teams. But they were dominating those games in a way that the other teams who played those bottom three weren't necessarily. So I still think Brisbane are a good side. I think maybe they're not the amazing ladder leading league leading side we thought, but I think I need to see them face some tough competition. I perhaps got a bit excited by the hype last week or last recording. Let's see how they go against the three Melbourne sides and the Mariners, and then I'll sort of have a fair picture of the Roar, I think.
Well, they play the Mariners this weekend, which is going to be an interesting one. They play at home at least, so there's that advantage for them. But the way the Mariners are going as well, Mariners haven't lost yet this season. That'll be a big test for them. Matt, do you have anything to add in that regard?
Yeah, look, I don't think off the back of certainly the comments that I had a fortnight ago and the clip that the powers that be decided to put out on FPF socials, really, really praising Brisbane when I was the one that was actually agnostic on them to
That
begin with. So
was Harry's
again,
choice.
yeah, look, you're doing me dirty. You're doing me dirty.
Ha.
I think there's a natural conclusion here where I think we all at least understood that yes, they're playing really well and there's a huge asset there, but we all collectively agreed they were overperforming to begin with. And when you're a team that is mid to lower table for many years and you start like that, the only way's down for a start, but also just it's the consistency. And I think that is the one thing I said, whether or not it was on the clip that we put on socials, I don't know, but I just think that when it comes to these teams like Brisbane and Adelaide, they need to really challenge themselves for 22, 23 games a season. And that is currently what's untested. And the biggest thing for me, Cody, is, I've been pretty big on Wellington. You've seen the results that Wellington got. Who were those two results against? They were against the two teams that needed consistency. They came up against a team that, again, was really hungry for that win, went out and got the win, and now you're asking questions again, and it's crazy that the narrative can go so many ways because they come out and beat a Mariners team that's on the bounce, then the conversation again becomes look at Brisbane Roar, and that's just the nature of a capped A-League sometimes. I just think you're going to get those ebbs and flows, and I think again, given that this isn't a weekly program, given that we do it on the fortnight, yeah, maybe we just got to hold off on those sorts of comments sometimes. But I'm not. I again, I don't want to sit here and really, really praise Brisbane and then really, go off at them. I just think that you've obviously got a process of trying to build a winning DNA in somewhere that hasn't had one for a long time as well. And Adelaide under Stenter, they will have that problem as well. You watch in due time.
Yeah, consistency was something you mentioned. I think it was literally in the sentences after where that clip cut off. No, shout out Harry. He does a lot of good work for us at such a young age too, as well. Last two questions I've got. I'm actually going to pose one each to you because it kind of relates to both your areas of expertise. But Matt, I'll start with you. Are Perth starting poor or are they just unlucky?
So the thing that we all collectively agreed on, and the thing that we decided to sort of as a press collective speak to Stephen about after the victory loss was, you mentioned luck there, and I know it sounds ridiculous for a team that was really put together fairly hastily with an NPL NPL level promoted coach, let's say, not to disrespect Stephen, I think he's a very astute manager. Just the makeup of the team ultimately lent itself to like everyone agreeing that the team would be at the lower end of the table. And so to sit there and just say, oh, they're unlucky because they're losing, it's maybe a bit of a lazy analysis. But then you look at what's actually statistically going on with this team, and the numbers are actually pretty insane. Like, yes, they've conceded 12 goals, but the actual crucial ones that have been lost them points the last few games. I mean, they should have comfortably got past Canberra. Stanage Floody has a pretty incredible strike to equalise that one, and it was Canberra's only shot on target for the whole game. This is what I'm talking about. How can that a situation like that not just be your luck running out? And the thing that I just have etched into my mind is, yes, Casey Dumont was just at her absolute best. I mean, she was, to the extent that keepers can bowl out, they're obviously the ball's at a different part of the body, but it is still a form of bowling out. I mean, like, she was literally just like elite A-League level. You couldn't have asked for anything more. And when the minutes were crunching on, 86, 87, 89, before Alana Murphy just pulls out one of the all-time better strikes you're likely to see, you look over at the bench and you could see every single player was on their feet. They were encouraging the girls. Stephen Peters, you know, he looked like he was about to combust. I mean, he was just all over the shop. And that desperation, okay, you look, talk about bottom feeder clubs, maybe like the Wanderers, if it's too harsh a thing to say. Look at in the men's competition, look at the way Raw, Jets, and Glory are all playing at the moment. That level of desperation is something you don't see. So when you add that and how desperately they want that clean sheet, off the top of the fact that really the Canberra game should have been 3 points, Victory have basically stolen 3 points at the Sam Kerr Centre. Even Jeff Hopkins will tell you that they basically ended up stealing that or getting very fortunate with it. Is this Glory team even playing that bad? Like, seriously,
Well, that was the whole point of the question.
yeah, but seriously, like, I think they've actually really come into their own for a group that was just formed. Like, I'm really, really willing to give a lot of the individuals in this team, so as long as they stay fit, and this is maybe the concern in that you've got a Welsh veteran like Megan Wynne, who she's already pulling up lame. I just don't think she's the key cog that Glory needed her to be. But then you've got someone like Oni Zog at the back, who's an absolute rock. And I'm sitting here going, you know, is she going to be able to handle a 30-degree day when she's come from playing in Servette Geneva? Well, she took like a duck to water. I mean, she was brilliant. And this is exactly what I mean. This is the kind of thing that in pre-season we really needed to see from Perth. So, you know, I want to give the project time. And unlike what people are saying in the men's department, where it's like, I'll just give Shrilla time, they'll start the pressing, it'll all come together. No, that project's just dead in the water for 26 games, and we all have to admit it. This team is not dead in the water. Perth will be pulling out surprise results in the same way Wellington have. No problem. We've just got to give the project time. Because frankly, yeah, okay. They didn't have they didn't have Chidiak, they didn't have Gilnick, but Victory looked pretty uncomfortable at times against that Perth team.
Annabelle, finish off with you. Now, Sydney FC, their next five games, they play three at home. It could be that long, actually, before we do get back into recording, or properly at least, anyway. But you're talking Newcastle Jets, Wellington Phoenix, Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City, Perth Glory. There's some hard games in there, but there's some winnable games in there. This rut that Sydney FC find themselves in, how long does it last?
I think they can get some points before Christmas. I think they have to get some points before Christmas against the Jets and the Phoenix. Ideally, as a Sydney FC fan, I'd like them to get all six, and I think they to have a realistic shot at being in the top six and having a run towards the finals. I think they need to get all six. I think they need to win both of those games heading into Christmas, and then, you know, I think at Christmas your mind resets a little bit. You know, all the players will relax that little bit, and if they've got 6 points, then they will really relax and head into a tough game against, who do they have?
Melbourne Victory
They
after
have
that.
Victory on the 28th, so that's a tough game. If they've got 6 points going into that, then they're not stressing as much. Then they know it's a tough game, but it's not, oh God, like our season's a disaster type of game. Whereas, yeah, if they don't have those 6 points, you know, the panic in that camp that isn't great at dealing with this sorts of, you know, situation. Like, as you mentioned, Matt Perth, you know, a little bit more comfortable with the way they're playing, because number one, they are playing quite well. Like, there's not panic in terms of the quality, just the results. Whereas Sydney FC, I haven't really been that impressed with their quality. And certainly their results have been no good. And they also just aren't used to dealing with this kind of situation in a way that some of the other lower level clubs, you know, have had on and off years, or even just off years, some of them. Sydney FC have really had just on years. So it's going to be really tough for them to navigate if they don't get any points out of those games. I think A win and a draw would be good, even just one win. I think boost spirits. I think if they don't get a single win out of those two games, it'll really set them back for the whole season.
Well, we talked about it before the Sydney Derby. You lose that game, and then you go into Melbourne City. You're basically on the ropes. But even a win that was not the most convincing. You looked at the way they then played against Melbourne City, where they looked like the Sydney FC side that we're used to. They get a couple of wins here. You're able to go in that Melbourne victory game with a little bit of confidence. I'd be intrigued to see what happens if they do struggle over these next two games. I'd even argue, let's just say they beat Newcastle Jets and then lose to Wellington Phoenix. You're still going into that Melbourne victory game in an uncomfortable position, and going into a game in Melbourne Victory aren't exactly, a side that's going to be there for the taking. They're playing good football this season. They're up near the top of the ladder. They're close to being a league leading side. You go into that game without a bit of confidence, Melbourne Victory can punish you. They did it to Western United earlier this season. I would be very shocked if they couldn't do it to Sydney FC. It's a precarious position where Sydney FC are, where you're almost desperate for points, where usually they're a side that if you can see the performance is there, the points are going to come. But it's interesting because I don't know if there's that vibe around Sydney FC this year anymore, which is definitely different to what I guess we're used to. But we will wrap it up there. For all our keen, avid fans, we're going to have one more episode before the end of the year. That'll come a little bit quicker. It'll come next week before Christmas. We'll do a quick episode. It won't be our full-length normal show. We'll do maybe even a Christmas special, Matt. How does that sound?
You will remember I was up at 4 a.m. on Christmas Eve to
Matt,
record for
we're
FBF
not doing the
Masters.
Christmas Eve recording. That's not how it's happening. I've got to work that day this time.
But I tell you what, I'm actually really feasting for a podcast next week in the lead up to Christmas because of the inaugural women's futsal camp that's going to take place in New South
Yes.
Wales. And if you don't think I'm not itching to talk about that, you've got something else coming up because, the squad is really, really an interesting one. And
Few ex-A-League players in there
surprise,
too.
well, a current A-League player watched this space. I just feel like women's futsal is the kind of thing where, like, if we get this right, if we're able to go toe to toe with a country like the Philippines that's hosting the World Cup, that is going to set an impression of really, really high stakes for us to be able to get to a World Cup where, I mean, the youth teams have been struggling a lot of late, and for the reputation that the Matildas have, there's the ability to keep the women's football program really, really strong with something like the futsal team. And the background of a lot of the girls in that team is a really, really interesting. A lot of players that have really been lugging it out at the NPL level. I can even tell you a story of one of the true sort of Football West or Western Australian-based players in the squad. She, when she was about 14 or 15, managed to get a move to play futsal in Italy. And just that kind of stuff where none of us would know the stories. I mean, this is a team that's about to walk onto the field for literally the first time ever. It just makes me so excited, and I'll be really, really looking forward to seeing some more to come out of the camp.
Yeah, so names that probably look a little bit familiar, at least from one your point of view, Annabelle Sarah Easthope, Hills United goalkeeper. I'm not sure how much you saw of her this season. I remember watching her a couple of seasons back. She was a fantastic player. Name's probably more familiar with you, Annabelle, and even you, Matt, Demi Koulouzakis, former Glory striker, balled out massively at Olympic this season. Don't know how she didn't get an A-League contract. Alexia Carristal, what else is there? Stelle Fragale, Nat Tatham. There's some names there to be excited about. Sophie Magus, Apia Leichhardt, goalkeeper. It's an interesting squad. I'm actually, yeah, like I said, I'm very keen to see how it goes.
No, keen to see it, but also very, very keen to see how Stephen Peters goes about potentially releasing Nat, because you'll see on the media release that FA put, and I probably shouldn't be talking about this on a public podcast, but there actually is a disclaimer that, like, players that are with A-League clubs, essentially they're there because we know that they are like an expression of interest to be in the futsal team. But ultimately, this is like a 26 to 30 player squad. You remember there's only five players on the field in a game of futsal, right? So ultimately, if Stephen Peters can't actually release Tatham for the crucial January window, then she's been named in a squad that she legally can't even play for, which is a funny one. Because the first game against Turkmenistan, I think it actually is, might be Uzbekistan. I'm gonna get those two mixed up a lot. That'll literally be on like the 10th or 11th of January. So I'm really not sure, because that's just an important window you can't miss if you're an A-League club, whether Nat actually gets the permission to go. It'd be a risky one for Stephen to do, because she played an important part on the weekend in particular. So yeah, just an ongoing narrative there.
Oh, that's fair. Look, we will wrap it up now. For anyone that's listening, thank you so much for always supporting us. We do genuinely appreciate it. If you want more as coverage of all things football, not just women's football, anything Australian football, please check out the Front Page Football website, frontpagefootball.net. Check us out on Instagram, Front PG Football, Twitter, Frontship PG Football. What else are we on? TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, whatever it's called. LinkedIn, if you're the business type, but we are on a few different any social media platform that you can think of, we are more than likely on it. That's it for us today. We will see you next week for a Christmas special before we wrap up for the year. Until then, bye for now.